Be wary of the odd couple. Teresa and Donald was one of the headlines in our papers this week here in Australia. And indeed, it's quite fascinating to watch these two different styles, the reality TV star and the vicar's daughter, work together. As you might have heard, there was a big meeting today in Washington between the British Prime Minister Theresa May and the new President Donald Trump. The British Prime Minister is extending a warm hand to the President and spoke of their special relationship and a new era of American renewal. Donald Trump is particularly unpopular, though, in the UK, and the risks are therefore quite significant for Theresa May. Any talk of special relationships calls to mind the Blair-Bush interactions, which can spark incandescent rage among Brits. I'm sure you've experienced this. Well, joining me to discuss this, someone who's looking firsthand, is Anne McElvoy. She's a senior editor at The Economist, and she's been following Theresa May closely. So close, she's also flown to Washington to cover this big meeting and was part, no doubt, of the giant press troop that greeted them. Welcome, Anne, to Saturday Extra.
Hello, nice to be with you.
How would you judge this first encounter? How do you think the British people will judge it?
Well, it was quite a risk for Theresa May to do this for some of the reasons you've outlined. I mean, people do tend to divide about Donald Trump, not so much as what he stands for in America, but what that reflects about their own views towards Brexit particularly and his support for Britain leaving the European Union and lots of arguments that went along with that. However, you know, I've written in favour of Theresa May going off to see the Donald as he styles himself, partly because that transatlantic relationship has been very durable. It hasn't always been easy. The terms of trade were not just money trade, but you know, trade and politics, even around the time of the Second World War, were quite difficult. And to simply say, well, we're not going to engage with him, even though he's very difficult and a lot of people don't like him, would, I think, be counterproductive. And I think Theresa May kind of won that argument in Washington when he came out and said, yes, I do stand by the NATO alliance. The big worry, of course, was that he was going to buddy up to Vladimir Putin so much that NATO and all that NATO stands for in security would be thrown out or even sort of carelessly ditched in one of those Trump moments where you never quite know what's going to be ditched next. So I think she will feel that it was definitely worth the airfare.
So the NATO, it seemed to me that the NATO emphasis was terribly important. Was Iran mentioned? Because that's been another area that people judge to be, that could have been, things could have been set back in this meeting.
I'm sure it was mentioned privately. The British government, of which Theresa May was, of course, a member as Home Secretary, as Interior Minister for a long time, so she's not new to the top table. They feel that they had a bit of a stake in the Iran deal, that British diplomacy and knowledge and security expertise helped there. So I'm sure that she raised that. There is a question, though, isn't there? If we looked at what happened in the press conference, it's probably unwise, knowing how mercurial the new president can be. I'm sure Theresa May, who's quite sort of savvy, low-key but quite savvy in the way that she handles what she probably regards as a large man-child, she probably is not going to turn up and say, oh, by the way, have you got anything new to say on Iran? Because I think that could easily backfire. I think her whole strategy, the whole play, as I understand the preparation from Number 10 in London, was to get Donald Trump to agree to quite specific things. She wanted to get him say even more firmly than in the last 36 hours that he was backing off re-embracing torture or waterboarding. And he did. You know, he wriggled about a bit, but he did. That helped shore up the view that it was worth going, that she wasn't some sort of terrible patsy for him as he you know, hung on to a very bad policy position.
Oh, interesting. I must say, when I listened, I thought she was extremely concise, which you're used to it, but we're learning about it. He was immensely rambly. That was what I was struck by. It was just a different type of press conference, I suppose.
That's true. I liked your introduction as the odd couple, and I think that is very true. If there's a weakness to Theresa May, it is that she is concise to the point of being, you know, sometimes trying to interview Theresa May is, you know, you just think I'm just going to get blood out of the stone. It'd be a lot easier. Donald Trump, never a problem to get him talking, sometimes a problem to get him listening. And I think when he said Theresa's a people person, so am I, the British press corps had sort of paroxysms of, sort of silent laughter, because the one thing Theresa, who is, you know, very strong-willed, is Theresa, she's really not well known for, is being particularly warm with people or projecting much outside her inner circle. You know, she's there as the grown-up in the room. She's the one who was left standing after the great implosion of the Conservative leadership after Brexit. And she's very different from Donald in that way. She has not, I think Donald Trump, I should really, really say, yeah, she's not made her mark by flamboyance. But I thought, given that, he was sounding, sometimes it sounded as if he were trying rather hard, as if he were addressing a minor royal. But he, you know, he does want that invitation to the palace. He really does want that. We know that. And that's forthcoming.
Is it forthcoming? Do we know?
Yes, I think we can take it as forthcoming. It's probably for Her Majesty, not me, to confirm that to your listeners. But I think
see.
It is well.
Watch this space.
I think that basically what we heard in Washington was it was mentioned. I think in the briefings as something that's in train. So anything, if you think you've seen one odd couple, you ain't seen nothing yet. But you know, from British diplomacy. position. It's risky. It's always risky, and particularly when people are saying, normalizing, you're doing the wrong thing, you're getting too close. I think ultimately she stands for a continuity of British relations with Washington, and that means sometimes factoring in an unreckonable president.
Well, where did they, was there any place you could sense that they did not concur?
That's a very good question. I mean, they went out of their way to be polite. I think what happened on the point on torture was that Theresa May would, I think, even though you know she's dealt with the hard end of security stuff, but she was not happy at all with the idea that this has been raised again. It also brought complications for British government. You know, what did you know and when did you know it? And you were taking intelligence product from these people, you know, so, and you know, what's your co-responsibility, moral and legal? So I got the impression she was keen to close that down. There was one moment when Donald Trump, in his way, you know, said, I don't agree, actually, with General Mattis on this. And we thought, oh, no, or she thought probably, oh, no, he's going to go off on one, and he's going to start defending the old position, you know, that waterboarding wasn't terror, and we'd be back into that one. And I thought at that point, you just see sometimes a little gimlet stare from Theresa May when she hears something that she doesn't like. I think that was one point. I think another one actually was Brexit, when he was, you know, we knew this view that it was going to be great. Well, Theresa May has to deliver a confident Brexit, and the UK has to keep trading, and its wider trading relationships, not least with Australia, will be at the forefront. But it's not her style to go out there, particularly if she voted for Remain. She was, not very enthusiastic, but she did vote for Remain. So she doesn't really fancy a relationship between Donald Trump and Britain that is based around him wandering around saying, this was great, you've done the right thing. Towards the back end of the press conference, that's the way it went. She just kept that silence that you keep when you think, anything that I add is going to add fuel to the fire, and at least half of my party, pretty much half of my country, isn't going to like it. I think she was just thinking, you know, get us off here, give me a cup of tea, and you know, get back to the private talks.
So you think that the headlines in Britain will be good after this, do you? You think that she will be given a markup for being, I think you've tweeted, pragmatic becoming the new norm in between.
Pragmatic is the new norm. I think it depends, as they say, you know, how will history judge me? Well, it depends who writes it. There are a lot of people, and I think certainly the left liberal press will still be saying it's grovelling, you shouldn't have gone so soon. I think if you're looking at it from the perspective of, well, you still have to deal with Donald Trump, whether or not you accept him or anything like his views. I think as an event, it didn't go off badly. If you think of what it could have done, it would have been that Theresa May went over there. There was a long wrangle, sort of semi-publicly, about trade, and that he then says something inflammatory, possibly about torture or something, understandably gets people, you know, fuming and very, very angry about the way that he talks about those things or immigration. That didn't happen. I felt it was a bit like, you know, watching this big character being rather restrained, and that she was, you know, at times you could see there was a slight anxiety in her face about that. But the one thing you can say about Theresa May, she's decided she doesn't take gambles. She once told me that she made big decisions by doing a ledger, like an accountant, and both sides, and then she comes to the conclusion. She'd drawn up that ledger. She pretty much knew what she was going to get into. I think she will be happy that Donald Trump spoke courteously about it. After all, he said, you know, we're going to get on well. He said we didn't know whether he would get on well with the rest of the world, which is probably the only president to come in announcing that.
Didn't know. Some people he liked who he thought he wouldn't, and otherwise also the other way around. He was
yes. And then someone said, well, in the British press corps, asked, well, you're very mercurial. How can we trust you? He said, I'm not as mercurial as you think. So the trouble with analysing Donald Trump's statements is they do tend to eat themselves. She knew perfectly well at any point he could go off-piste. He could tell us that we're getting on well today, but we're not going to get on well tomorrow. And then he turned around and said, yes, but we seem to be getting on very well. She's probably thinking, just leave it there. You know?
Just pause. Press the pause button. Just let me tell listeners, Anne McElvoy, a senior editor at The Economist, is joining us, having been just come from the press conference with Theresa May and Donald Trump. Just in terms of just her more broadly, I just wonder how you're judging her. In the very interesting piece in The Economist, it was pointed out, one thing, I didn't know she had diabetes. So she's actually got diabetes type 1. She has to inject herself every day.
Yes, I mean, that came up, I think she had been doing so for a little while and then decided to make it public a little while ago. And as it happened, she wouldn't have been able to run for leader without that being in the public domain. She's a very experienced politician. You know, she's had the kind of six decades of experience after we've had much younger prime ministers. So a big difference in style there. And even that disclosure, she did it through the prism of a diabetes charity. I didn't think she was hugely comfortable talking about her own health, her own age. She comes from a type and a background. She's quite reticent. She's a vicar's daughter. She doesn't mind going out and engaging with people and listening to problems. She's very sympathetic but quite tough. She is learning, I think, the trade of prime minister. The piece that we ran, the rather more critical piece a couple of weeks ago, was saying, well, is it clear what she absolutely wants? And I think one of the problems for someone who's been in a senior job but hasn't had that full beam of attention that comes onto you as prime minister at a particularly difficult time in Britain, in global affairs, in the transatlantic relationship, is that every word you say and the tone that she sometimes has struck, which has been arguably too strident, as she talked about liberal elites and global citizens who didn't really know where they belonged, and, you know, an awful lot of people who do business with Britain who fall exactly into that category. They're in London one day, New York the next. She'd travel even more than the press pack. They thought, well, hang on a minute, what's wrong with that? You know, what's wrong with trading? What's wrong with travelling?
Well,
what's
in fact,
wrong
there was
moving jobs? She's had to learn from that.
There was a great line, I thought, in your piece. Somebody said, she is the opposite of cosmopolitan. Do you think, is that a fair comment? Because that certainly would fly in the face of that very constituency you're describing in the UK.
She is the opposite of cosmopolitan in that that's not what she wants to stand for. She is not a particularly parochial person. She's highly educated. She comes out of the Oxford and Cambridge machine that seems to educate pretty much all British leaders. But she is different, and she's different from David Cameron in that regard, or indeed Tony Blair from Labour beforehand, with those big overreaching metropolitan or cosmopolitan, which you call them, arrangements, friendships. One thinks back to Paul Keating and Tony Blair, for instance. They're really good friends despite the many thousands of miles. So she comes from a different world. Her whole aim is to represent those parts of Britain she sees as left behind by events, by globalisation, by the changing economy, and simply you don't feel that the people who've been speaking from London are representing them. Sometimes that's seen as being the poor, those in the boondocks, those who are left behind, as there are in all societies. I don't think she means that at all. I think she means 50 miles outside London, quite nice little market towns where a lot of people live, or towns in the north of England where they're not spending their time talking to each other going to the same parties, being in the same room, so to speak, even if it's across many miles and many different countries in the world. She's not as comfortable in that setting, but she doesn't want to be. She's leader of the party now precisely because she stood for something a little bit different from those smart young men who went before her.
Well, look, thank you so much for joining us with that overview and those marvellous sort of observations, you know, character as well as sheer news events. Thank you for your time. I hope we can speak again.
Thank you very much for having me.
Anne McElvoy, a senior editor at The Economist magazine, joining us there from Washington. And no doubt Theresa May will be on our radar throughout the year.